Good afternoon, everyone. As Mr. Holliday mentioned, this is the day or part of the year when people are starting to look at their New Year's resolutions, changing their diet, losing weight, gaining weight, maybe getting a different job, maybe changing a habit, getting more sleep, better grades, taking a vacation or a cruise, just a few. Researchers have found that approximately 80% of those resolutions by mid-February will have fallen by the wayside. They started out as good intentions, but, you know, people find other diversions, they lose interest, they get discouraged, and so they give up. And a few are able to keep their resolutions, but a lot of them have end up being frustrated rather than happy. We took a trip to Los Angeles to visit our son during Thanksgiving, and it was the first time that we've actually had a three-week vacation since 1987 when we went to the Feast of Tabernacles in Amman, Jordan. And after the feast, we were able to visit Egypt or Israel for 5 days and Egypt for 3 days. So it was all together totaled up to 3 weeks. And this is the first time since that time we've been able to do it. We spent Thanksgiving with my son Greg and his two children and wife. He was raised in the church but no longer attends. But watching him as he interacts with his family and his two girls, I know that some of the things he learned over that time he was in the church have affected particularly his child-rearing practices. There's a TV in the house, but it's only on one time during the week, and that's Sunday night when they rent a DVD for their two girls. They select what it's going to be, and that's the only time they watch TV. The rest of the week, they're playing outside in their backyard. The oldest girl is in the sixth grade, and she practices running for long-distance running back and forth. She has piano lessons. She was taking guitar lessons, but it was taking too much time, so she quit those, but she's taking karate lessons as well. And her younger sister, Ashley, who's in the fourth grade, takes gymnastic lessons and also has ballet once a week to gain poise for her gymnastics. And in addition, on her own, is learning how to juggle. So these kids, to me, are absolutely amazing. I walked with Ashley out in the residential part of where they live because she said, "Grandpa, I want to make a birthday card for Dad." He celebrated his 50th birthday while we were there. And so she was going to make something natural out of leaves and not buy a card. No, she wanted to do something that was special. So we walked around the neighborhood hand in hand, and she'd see a yellow leaf or an orange leaf. And I'd point out, "Boy, there's a shiny green." "Oh, no, I don't want to, you know, green's so common. We want, you know, color." So there was a big tree in front of one of the homes there, had a lot of beautiful purple leaves on. And she said, "Boy, those would be great." And I said, "Well, I think we better check with the owner. I don't want to be standing up there on the lawn going through leaves and have a police car pull up and, you know, say, 'What are you doing here?'" So we went up and knocked on the door and asked and got their permission. But anyway, that is the kind of creativity that these girls exhibit. She was pointing out different plants and different trees and telling me the names of them. And I was looking at her and said, "Where do you learn all this stuff?" And she said, "Well, we go to camp during the summer. They have day camps." And she said, "I learned it there." And she said, "You know," I said, "Well, what would you like to do when you grow up, Ashley?" And she said, "Well, I'd like to either be a veterinarian or a scientist, because she likes plants and animals, and at the fourth grade, she's already decided. There's a certain relationship that exists between parents and children, parents and grandchildren, and these relationships can produce happiness. And I'm telling you, that was a very happy time for me, for both Veronica and me, to be able to interact with our grandchildren in that way and spend time with them, because we very seldom are able to do it with that family being in Los Angeles. While I was there, I noticed a book in their library. It was one of Jennifer's books, my daughter-in-law, and it was called The Happiness Project by Gretchen Rubin. And, you know, anytime you see the word happiness, you tend to be motivated to look at it at least, because, you know, what's she got to say about happiness? So I started to read it, and it has a lot of great information. She's distilled wisdom from all over, including the Bible. She told about what motivated her to write and how it affected her life. She has certain credentials. She graduated from Yale and then went to work and clerk for Sandra O'Connor, the first woman Supreme Court judge. And working for someone like that, she gained a certain amount of, it was excellent background for her. I'm sure Sandra told her about the fact that when she graduated from law school, she was refused interviews by 40 private law firms for a job because she was a woman. She finally got a job as a deputy county attorney in San Mateo, California, after she said she'd worked for nothing. And as it turned out, that's what happened. She worked for nothing for 4 months until they were finally able to put her on a salary. But I thought, how many people today, if they're looking for a job and they see something they'd really like to do, would be willing to do that? To work for nothing. Of course, you know, some people, you know, are unable to do that. They have their bills and this type of thing. But I thought it was a great example. It was a great example for Gretchen to have someone like that as a mentor. Anyway, after she worked that year, she went and worked with a law firm and practiced law for about 5 years until she went through some things that helped her, helped her decide that she wanted to write. And I'm not going to mention those. I would just say that if you're interested in the subject of happiness, and I'm going to touch on it a little as we go along here, I'd suggest checking her out, check those books out from the library, or listen to her on YouTube. We were talking about YouTube a while ago. She has a number of lectures that are on there, and all you have to do is type her name in, Gretchen Rubin, and the word happiness, and you'll get all kinds of information. And they're fascinating topics. Not everything that she says in her interviews, a lot of it's repetition, or the lectures that she gives is found in the books, because she's continually examining this body of knowledge and refining it. But in any event, if you want to see what kind of a person she is, I'd recommend doing that. In the New King James Version, Proverbs 3, verse 13, we're told, "Happy is the man who finds wisdom and the man who gains understanding." We're talking about happiness, and here's a key. Happy is the man who finds wisdom and the man who gains understanding. Happiness can come from a number of sources. Gretchen said, there were a couple of things that she pointed out that I'm going to mention, because they're so small in some respects, and you might even say insignificant, but yet they're the type of things that can if applied, create happiness. And she was, in her last book, was talking about the home. And she said, one thing you can do, because all of us, I think, suffer from a certain amount of clutter. We moved from Monroe 3.5 years ago. We still have 25 tubs, Rubbermaid tubs of stuff in them that is in the back of the carport in a little shed there that we haven't opened. Because I told Veronica, if we move, we're not putting anything in storage. And I figured out right, you know, the smallest storage unit in that park was, you had to rent it for $40 a month. Well, that's approximately $1,500 that we've saved by letting it sit out there. There's only one thing that I know is buried somewhere under all those, but it wasn't significant enough to make me want to go and dig through them to find. One day I was interested in having some popcorn, and I know we have a popcorn popper somewhere in all of that stuff. I wasn't going to look in it, so I took a pan and just did the old-fashioned, you know, back and forth across a burner, and that satiated my appetite for popcorn. So I don't know when we'll uncover the popcorn. But anyway, in the process of cleaning your house to get rid of clutter, she said, find a shelf in your house and empty it completely of all its contents so that in your house there's just one empty shelf. She said that's a symbol of hope, that it is possible to have something like that. It'll motivate you to find a use for your unused items, but keep that shelf empty. I've discovered one quite recently as a result of listening to that or looking at that as a thing to do. I found a lower shelf in our bathroom closet. And I've drawn my line in the sand, and I don't think Veronica's found it yet, but it's inviolate. It can't be used. Remember that, Veronica. Obviously, it'd be better if it was out in the open. It's kind of hidden down there, and that's one reason I think she hasn't discovered it yet. But it does make have that effect on you. You see an empty shelf, and it kind of triggers you. Well, wouldn't we like to have some more space? You know, we'd be happier if we had a more organized and neat place to live. The other thing she said, and a lot of the things that she will talk about are recommendations and are examples that her readers and listeners have sent in. And one of the most prevalent, she said, was make your bed. She said, you probably laugh when you hear that, but making your bed the first thing in the morning is one of the greatest things as far as making a difference in your life. Because if you walk into a bedroom, the bed usually takes a pretty significant portion of space. And if that's neat and tidy and you know, its covers are not thrown around and the pillows and everything, and you start out your day and that bed is made, it does affect your mind psychologically. It makes you feel better. It helps make you feel more organized. So she said it's small, but it works. And fortunately, Veronica does that automatically. She's always done that. She wakes up and she makes the bed. So I know how beneficial that can be because it does. It does remove disorder and confusion from your start in the morning. In the NIV, in 1 Corinthians 14:33, a well-known verse, for God is not a God of disorder, or chaos, or tumult, but he's a God of peace, as in all the congregations of the Lord's people. So, having order and lack of confusion in your life is certainly biblical. There was another thing that she mentioned as well, and I was going to have you participate, but I decided against it for a number of reasons. First of all, I don't want us to get sued. She said, and here again, it's a very small thing, very minor thing. You would never think of doing it. She said, but happy people jump. If you want to be happy, just, you know, take a little jump. Bounce off the floor. I was going to have you stand, except, you know, there's some I know probably are unable to do it and might fall over. I was going to have the older people, myself included, try to balance on one foot as a, alternative, because as you get older, you do tend to lose your balance easily, and so that helps strengthen you. But we do it as children. We do those things when we're young, as kids, but we don't do them. We don't have that spontaneous, contagious view of life as we get older. We tend to pull back. We tend to be reserved. I remember going to the feast once, and there was a middle-aged lady walking about 20 feet in front of me on a path, and I'm very certain she didn't know I was behind her, because all of a sudden she started skipping, like a little schoolgirl, skipping ahead of me. And she only did it for maybe, 8 or 10 feet. But it not only, I'm sure, affected her, made her feel happy, but it portrayed that happiness. It was contagious. I felt happy watching her, because I could tell whatever was motivating her to do it, and it was making her happy, and as a result, she was skipping. So either jump or skip if you want to raise your level of happiness. In the NLT, 1 Timothy 4 and verse 8, we're told that by Paul talking to Timothy, he said, physical training is good. So that's beneficial. Physical training is good, but training for godliness is much better, promising benefits in this life and in the life to come. So there's nothing wrong with exercising. Those people in the congregation who exercise frequently, who run, who are runners, they know that. They know what the endorphins do, and they know how beneficial that can be. A number of years ago, I made another trip to Los Angeles. This was years ago before I was married. I was a junior in college. I'd finished the first quarter of my junior year, but I didn't know what I wanted to major in. And I'd been interested in the theater, and I knew that UCLA had a good theater arts program, so I decided to go there. Saved my money during the summer, went down on the train, took a bus out to Westwood, found an old decrepit hotel, and rented a room there, and then went over to the student union building to see what I could do in the way of jobs. I found a job hashing in a sorority, serving food to the ladies, and in turn getting my meals, so that took care of food. Secondly, I answered an ad for a cute little apartment with a bathroom as well over this elderly lady's garage, and all she wanted for it was to have someone that could help her occasionally doing odd jobs around the house and yard work and that type of thing. So that covered food, that covered shelter. Then I got a job I had a job mowing lawn Saturday morning. That was before I was in the church, for a young couple that had a couple of young children, and that sometimes Saturday night I'd babysit them. Then I got a job parking cars at the Hillcrest Country Club in Los Angeles. I probably would have done it for nothing, because at my age, being able to sit in a Rolls Royce or a Bentley or a Jaguar and see that walnut-paneled dashboard and feel, you know, how a car like that feels when you drive it. It was priceless, a great experience. And finally, I got involved in a smog experiment with the psychology department. They were looking for guinea pigs, I guess, to sniff the air and let you know when it was smoggy or your perception. But anyway, that was five jobs, which pretty well carried me through that semester. But I can't really describe the feeling of exhilaration I had after doing all that, going to an unknown place and not knowing what lay ahead and taking a chance that everything would work out, which in fact it did. I had the bare essentials. There weren't any frills, but I was able to go to school. In 1 Timothy 6, verses 6 to 8, we are told, "But godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into this world, and it's for sure we can carry nothing out." And I always remember a minister who gave a sermon and said he'd never seen a hearse hauling a U-Haul or towing a U-Haul. And that's very true. And because of that, having food and clothing, let us therewith be content. If we're godly, that is great gain to us. So over and above that, the basic necessities should be those that help suffice. In Matthew 6, 31 through 33, Jesus told us, he said, you know, don't worry about what you eat and what you drink. Don't worry about these things. Your heavenly Father knows. If you seek God's kingdom first, you don't need to worry about them. In Ecclesiastes 2, verse 24, we're told, "There is nothing better for a man than he should eat and drink, and that he should make his soul enjoy good in his labor. I saw that it was from the hand of God." It's the bare essence of life. If you refine it down to what we need in order to live a good life, we need to be able to eat and we need be able to drink. And over and above that, the psychic satisfaction that we derive from whatever job it is we're doing, that's a complete life. It says here, "I saw that was from the hand of God." If you can say that you're happy with your work, and if you have enough to eat and enough to drink, that is an illustration of true happiness. In Ecclesiastes 3 and verse 4, it says there's a time to laugh and dance, and also there's a time to weep and mourn. So these things come in and out of our lives. There's a time when we're happy, and there's a time when perhaps we're sad because of the things happening to us or the things happening to our family. We moved from Monroe, as I'm sure I've mentioned before, to Eatonville 3.5 years ago so Veronica could take care of her mom. On the Day of Atonement this past fall, I was driving to church, and I was about just on the outskirts of Renton, and I got a call on my cell phone, and she said, "I just wanted to let you know that Mom died this morning at 10:45. And I said, "Well, do you want me to come home?" Because I told her where I was. And she said, "No, that's all right. We've notified the mortuary, and all we're going to be doing is sitting here and waiting for them to come." Well, as a result of that happening, and this, of course, was right before the feast, on Sunday we went to the mortuary to fill out all the forms that we needed to. On Monday we notified all of the people and institutions, Medicare, Social Security, and all of those things. On Tuesday, which was the day before Wednesday when the first evening service was, Veronica walked into her closet with three plastic bags or four plastic bags and just grabbed clothes off the hanger, threw them in these bags, and she said, "I'm taking my iron and I'll worry about sorting them out when we get there." And that's how we left for the feast. I mean, that's just as abrupt as it was because of the circumstances of her mom's death. Well, as usual, when you get to the feast, it usually takes a few days for things to kind of unwind and get into a certain rhythm. And a couple days later, we walked across the street from the Sandman Hotel. We were in Abbotsford for the feast, to a big grocery store there to buy some groceries for the rest of the feast. And as we were walking down one of the aisles, I saw her hand go out, and she said, "Mom will really like the..." And then she stopped and brought her hand back, and I could see tears in her eyes. And she told me later that was the first time that she'd cried since her mom died, because she'd been running on adrenaline really up until now, and she was doing something that she does usually automatically at the feast. She was always buying something for her mom from a site we visited that was representative of that site. In this case, she was reaching for a package of maple leaf cookies, the symbol of Canada. And then she realized, you know, there's no sense bringing it back because mom's not there. In Ecclesiastes 3 and verse 12, we're told, "Know that there is no good in them, but for a man to rejoice and to do good in his life." And in Gretchen's books or in one of her speeches or lectures, she said that people who give, people who volunteer of their time and their money, live longer and are happier. That's just the way it works. If you go into hospitals, a lot of time you'll see elderly people working there, answering questions and this type of thing. And, you know, you look at them, some are quite old and they're happy and they're enjoying what they're doing and they're performing a service. And that's probably one of the reasons why they're still alive. But she said that people who give and volunteer live longer and are happier. And that kind of follows on what Darren said about it being more blessed to give than to receive. That you receive joy and satisfaction out of performing something useful, something that someone in society is benefiting from. Sometimes it's someone in the church, sometimes it's someone outside of the church. But wherever it is and however it happens, you receive happiness from doing that. That's just the way we're wired. That's the way God made us. In Ecclesiastes 3 and verse 13, it says, "And also that every man should eat and drink and enjoy the good of all his labor." Once again, very basic. It is the gift of God. That's God's gift to us. And if you notice the beautiful video that was on just before I got up here. I mean, one picture is worth a thousand words when you think of the beautiful creation we witnessed. There wouldn't have even had to been words there. I mean, it just makes you realize how sometimes we get so focused on what's going on in our lives and we forget about that huge creation out there and the magnificent parts of it that we're able to enjoy ourselves. I think one of the things I remember was that from the feast, and you'll probably remember the video that we had, the poignant advice of the young lady in the feast video who lost her leg. She said so simply, so succinctly, and yet so eloquently, and I had never heard this before. She stated, "Don't be a show-up Christian." I thought how much that encapsulates a certain principle. Don't just show up. Don't walk in just as the last song is being sung and the opening prayer takes place, or don't go out the door right after the closing prayer. Don't just show up here. Stay around. Come early. Get engaged. Get acquainted with your brethren. If you want to be happy, it's right here in this room. Don't just show up. Go and talk to Don and Joe about helping them with the coffee. They have repeatedly asked for volunteers. And I'm sure there are people that drink coffee, you know, and see them standing out there all the time. Take a month out of, you know, however his schedule is set up and volunteer. You'll feel a lot better. You won't feel guilty drinking that coffee and never helping do anything to get it out there. Well, there are many small steps you can take to becoming happy and happy and or happier. And that was one of the things that Gretchen pointed out in her books. She said most of us generally, unless a person's suffering from clinical depression or depression, and she wasn't meant to belittle that, or she wasn't trying to minimize it. She said, you know, people that are suffering from that need to go to a counselor, they need to have medication, they need to go to a doctor. She wasn't addressing that group, and I wanted to clarify that because, you know, this can look like, well, it's just a Pollyanna, do this, and you'll be wonderful, because that's not the case. What she was trying to do was trying to enable you to, from whatever level of happiness you would say, and everyone's different, a way to maybe take it up a notch, to become a little more happy in what you do, in the way you conduct your life, and then based on what you do to enable you to be happier, maybe take it up another notch, and just to have that approach in the way you live. Well, as I said, there are many small steps. We've talked about a number of them. I neglected to say I tried jumping with our three small dogs, and they were sitting down there kind of milling around, wagging their tail, looking up at me expectantly, as if to say, well, what are you going to do for an encore? I got as much happiness, I think, out of watching their reaction to me jumping as I did from the jump itself. But be that as it may, some of these small steps can help to make you happy and or happier. Well, as you leave here today, resolve to take a penetrating look at what you can do to simplify your life. Because coupled with the priceless knowledge of God's plan and your future role in it, and we're all aware of that, with food and with clothing, you truly can be happy and you can be content.